The question, Jeff Merrick, isn't whether or not the hockey writers of North America would like to take frequent road trips to Las Vegas to cover hockey. The question is how many of them will still be on the beat after covering those games.
Yeah, how many of them will still have their marriages intact? How many of them will have to give their livers a proper rinse? How many will stay the extra day? How many stories will be hustled along? How many stories will be written by the time the second period ends?
Yes, right? How many writers will be on planes leaving that coverage, sending out emails to all of the other editors they know looking for freelance opportunities because all of a sudden they have a bit of a financial crisis happening
in
their lives.
Exactly. Kind of a little bit light at the end of the week. A little tapped out. He's trying to make ends meet here.
Indeed. Yeah. Indeed. So Vegas and NHL hockey was the big story this week, not only because it's the end of August and there's F all going on, but also because some people were saying with some level of finality that Las Vegas is getting a team. Tony Gallagher, who took time away from accusing the National Hockey League of conspiring against the Vancouver Canucks, reported that Vegas was getting a team. His sources indicate it's a signed, sealed, and delivered deal, which is an odd thing because don't you need owners in order to sign a deal? And there's nobody that the NHL is actively negotiating with. Then then Dan Patrick, no less an authority than Dan Patrick of Notre Dame Sports, comes forward and says that Las Vegas will be getting a team. I believe he said by 2016, which is a very specific date. But that would mean the 2016-2017 season. And 2017, Jeff Merrick, seems to be the target date for a lot of this stuff because that, after all, will be the 100th anniversary, the 100th birthday of the National Hockey League.
Yes, where Toronto wants everything, where Toronto wants an outdoor game, and Toronto wants the draft, and Toronto wants it to be a celebration of them. But that's a huge target date, of course, for the NHL, a huge target date for Gary Bettman. You know, the belief is, you know, one of the things that he really wanted when he did his last contract was to make sure that he was there. He was a commissioner of record for the 100-year anniversary of the NHL. It is interesting, too. I do think, as we all do, that there will be expansion on the horizon for the NHL. But I'm always sort of buyer beware when this story pops up out of nowhere. We all know what's going to happen eventually, but I don't think the NHL is closer today than they were at the beginning of the summer. I don't think it's anything that's on the front burner for them. I think getting their international schedule down is probably pretty important for the NHL right now. If you want to look at sort of extracurricular events that don't involve the 2014-2015 season, I think that's probably a big one for the National Hockey League. I think expansion will happen. I just don't think that it's going to happen tomorrow.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. Somebody just walked in the room. Hang on.
For the record, Jeff Merrick, I also organized my Bubby's 100th birthday. So it's like second nature, okay?
See you, Gary. See you, Gary. Sorry. Just popped in for a second.
Yeah, that's good. I can't wait to hear Phil Esposito's take on expansion. He was there for one of them.
I remember back in 1991, we went down to Tampa Bay and we decided we were going to put a team there. I was at a Hooters right on the bay with Dave Andrechuk, and I says to Chucker, I know you're still in the league, but one day you're going to stand in front of this net and score a bunch of goals and raise the cup in Florida. And
now,
then
Phil,
I'll spank the waitress's tush.
Now, Phil, tell us all about snowing the NHL with the accoutrement of Japanese businessmen and the mystery of the where did the $50 million check go. Can you fill in some of the blanks on that one, Phil?
My grandson used to play a lot of Sega and Nintendo, and I knew that the Japanese had their stuff together, so I says to him, I says...
No, he had to leave. I'm sorry.
Oh, where did Phil go? Oh, Phil suddenly... I was going to get him to talk about, Manuel Raume and that stunt. Oh, well, we lost it, alas.
I said to him, I said, Toots, if you want to be a goalie, go ahead and be a goalie. I don't care. Nobody cares about goalies anyways.
That's actually pretty close to what Phil Esposito would say.
It's all about centermen.
How about, hey, Yeah, by the way, how about your gold medal winning goaltender from the Canadian women's team?
Shannon Sabados.
Getting another contract with the men's team? I know, very excited about that.
It's pretty. I mean, and hang on, she practiced with the Oilers last year, right?
Huge movement to try to get her to be the backup, the emergency backup that one night. I think it'll, I think it could happen at some point. I mean, let's just think of it this way. The emergency backup goaltender is almost a ceremonial position anyway. Like, we've hardly ever seen these guys actually get into a game. So why not? Throw her a bone, right?
Sure. Exactly. I guess. Throw her a bone, probably
the worst choice of words I could probably have made in that situation. But give her an opportunity is what I meant to say.
Yeah, provide her an opportunity to showcase her wares. I mean, as long as it's not done like the stunt that the Tampa did with Manuel Rayom. Right? Because in Phil's defense, I guess. I mean, he's up front about it. Yeah, it was a publicity stunt to draw attention to the Tampa Bay Lightning. If it's, you know what, she's a goaltender, she's available, we need a backup goaltender, let's get Shannon, then fine. If it's, hey, hang on a second here, let's call the marketing director and get the web guys involved in this and start this viral campaign, like, no. If it's that, then no thanks. But if it's, she's available, she can do it, play.
Yeah. The merits of her work. I mean, let's be honest here, is the thing. And she's earned it. I mean, hell, again, like, do you
she's
think,
goalie,
I watch, yeah, but listen. We all know that there are, you know, different positions in different sports. It takes a certain body type to excel in certain positions. What is keeping a woman from playing goal in the National Hockey League? And especially one as good as her?
Strength, probably quickness, thinking the game at that, like being able to react at that speed, I would imagine. I'll tell you what, you know, and this is by no means comparable to the NHL, but there were NHLers playing in the game. At that Hockey Night in Stouffville game last Thursday, you know who the best player on the ice was? Liz Knox, the goaltender.
Who's that?
Liz Knox.
Oh, yeah?
Liz Knox was fantastic. She was, like, unbelievable, out of this world, to the point where guys are coming back to the bench. All the guys thought that they were going to, you know, that's it, pad the stats, light the lamp, all of it. They're coming back to the bench, like, frustrated as hell. And not just in gameplay, but on shootouts, too. Stoning dudes. Now, I know it's not the NHL. Calm down, Merrick, and all that. But Liz Knox is the best player on the ice. She's great.
I would love to see Spados get their shot.
I know.
Get her shot. I would love to see it.
That'd be great. Yep.
It'd be awesome. It would be awesome. And she's earned it. I mean, carrying the battle flag for Team Canada in the Olympics the way she has. I mean, honestly.
Yeah, what happened there? I tuned out toward the end of the third period. Canada was about to go down. They were about to lose. And so I just turned the TV off and watched something else. I can't remember how that. It's like 2 minutes left. And I'm like, U.S. has got this one in the bag.
Well, the Americans had a shot at the Americans had a shot at an empty open net down the ice, and unbeknownst to us, the Canadians had lined the boards with a series of concentric fans that were blowing the puck off course. Mm. So it was it was very, very shady.
I thought the Canadian goalposts were fatter, and that goal, if it was an American goalpost, that would have actually gone in, but those fat Canadian goalposts. Really stuck it to the U.S. ladies, yeah.
Although, you know, in fairness, I mean, I think Tim Hortons is doing what they can to fatten up the American goalposts with the Buffalo the Buffalo chicken donuts, whatever the hell I saw they were making this week. Jesus.
What are they making? Hang on, I missed that. What did they make?
Hold on. I'm going to find it.
You've got to be kidding me. I mean, I don't sort of stay in tune with the latest in donut technology.
Buffalo Crunch Donut.
What's a Buffalo Crunch Donut? And who needs a Buffalo Crunch Donut?
All right. Buffalo Crunch Donut. Let's see here. It looks like it's got buffalo, like, the coating on it, and it's dipped in hot sauce.
Hang on. What's buffalo coating?
Hold on.
What's a buffalo coating?
It's a yeast donut dipped in hot sauce, typed with spicy crushed kettle chips, like kettle potato chips and hot sauce. It has a hot sauce center, and the icing is buffalo wing sauce.
You wonder why, like, most of the world hates us, where food has just become like one gigantic game, you know, where food, like the rest of the world, is looked at as an unnecessary nourishment. No, here it's just a game. There are TV channels dedicated to it. It's become the zenith of frivolity in our culture, and we wonder why people hate us.
I mean, someone's mocking us at Tim Hortons, right? Like, somebody at Tim Hortons is like, you know, people have been scarfing down this terrible coffee and these donuts for as long as you have. Now we're going to really push the envelope. Now we're going to see how far we can take it.
Let's see how far you dum-dums will take this. I'm waiting for the Soylent Green donut. That's all I know. It's over.
It's made of Tim Horton. Vegas, by the way. Oh, what? No, what's wrong?
I just got off the QEW. Next one. Sorry.
That's just
sorry. I know. That was bad. Sorry about that. I apologize. Bad joke. Bad hockey joke.
Oh, you got a donut shop named after you? Well, I died.
Okay, yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, there's a lot of things we got to apologize for on this podcast. We should just do our standard end-of-the-week apologies when we get the show rolling.
That's an excellent point. Some podcasts have the Department of Corrections. We just have the Department of Apologies. You can handle that as a Canadian.
I'm used to it. I did it in line at the grocery store today, bumped into someone else's cart. But actually, someone bumped into me, and I turned around, and instinctively I said, I'm sorry. She looked at me. She's an older woman. She looked at me and said, no, I'm the one that hit you. And I just said, I'm sorry. It's just a normal reaction.
45 minutes later.
Exactly. We had a conversation about who really was sorry in that moment. That moment you really wish you were American and just told each other to F off and moved on.
Oh, yeah. I'm like 85% sorrier than you are as well. No. I believe I'm the sorrier one in this situation, my friend. So, anyway.
Welcome across the border.
So Gallagher says Vegas and Patrick says Vegas, but then Howard Bloom of Sports Business News upped the ante.
Hammer.
He's not just simply saying Vegas. He is saying Vegas and Seattle and Toronto and Quebec by 2017, the 100th birthday of the National Hockey League.
Yeah, that went from Boston cream to that donut you just described a second ago. It's just like, what other crap can we put on this thing to make the story even more outrageous?
Right.
That's essentially what happened from Gallagher to Bloom, is the Boston cream to that Buffalo donut you just described. Listen, eventually the NHL is going to expand. The funny thing that I always, that I sort of sideways snicker at, although it does sort of make sense logically when you really think about it, it kind of doesn't, this idea that if they expand by four teams, that somehow the talent pool will be diluted in the NHL. So you're telling me that when was the last time the NHL expanded? 2000 with Columbus and Minnesota? You're telling me so that in 14 years, that the quality of player hasn't improved at all and that there aren't 75 players that could hang at the NHL level. Internationally. Okay. I mean, you have that many goaltenders that are unemployed that could play at the NHL level, let alone defensemen and forwards.
Goaltender was never the issue, though. Like, even the expansion teams had decent goaltending. They had
always had a
in front goaltender. Of them. Yeah, they always had a goaltender. And I think the two things I'll say about that are, I do believe that if we went to four teams within a 3 or 4 year span, it would greatly impact the talent on the ice. It would. Four teams is a lot. And I don't know if the talent pool is necessarily that deep without some replenishing from other leagues and that kind of thing happening. Two teams is no problem. Two teams is two players off of every roster. And all it means is that the marginal AHL/NHL tweener creeps up to the third line probably instead of being relegated to the fourth line on these teams. That's all it means.
That's right.
Two teams is not going to affect the on-ice product in any way. And the best part about it is that unlike when we had massive expansion in the 1990s, the game has changed, thank you, Brendan Shanahan, to the point where it's not going to be water skiing, clutch and grab, we're trying to win at any cost trap hockey like we saw Florida play and other teams play during that time period just to compete, just to stay competitive. They're not going to be able to do that now, in theory. So the on-ice product won't be affected by teams that are going to suck and be struggling. And I don't think the overall talent level is going to be affected much because it's only two players from each team.
If you ever feel like pissing off a fan of Bobby Orr, here's what you need to do. Speaking of diluting talent.
You mentioned alcohol. Oh, wait. No, that was how you piss off Bobby Orr. Sorry.
Now, here's how you infuriate a Bobby Orr fan. You say to yourself, okay, so Bobby Orr came into the NHL in 1966 as a fresh-faced rookie playing with the Oshawa Generals. Wish, what happened? Refresh my memory here. What happened in 1967? I believe there was something called the Great Expansion, where six teams turned into 12. Boom! So the NHL doubled. What happened in 1970? Two more teams. Hello, Buffalo. Hello, Vancouver. They entered the mix. In 72, we had a couple of more teams. Then there was something called the WHA, the World Hockey Association, and they pilfered talent. So if you want to piss off a Bobby Orr fan who wants to sell you on Bobby Orr as the greatest player of all time, spin around, do the history, and say, he was a good player. He was probably the best player at the time that the NHL was at its weakest.
There it is.
And then watch the – and I can hear Karen Douglas already in Edmonton, who's a huge Bobby Orr fan and diehard listener to this podcast, whipping things at her computer right now as I bring this awkward little fact up.
Well, the thing I would always like you to do when you bring this up, and you've mentioned it before on the show, is I've always liked if you would walk up to a gentleman by the name of Iron Michael Tyson, and you look him in the eye and say, sir, the only reason you were so successful is because you were boxing in what was arguably one of the weakest eras for heavyweight champions.
You see how well that goes over. Now, because you know, I don't listen, know. Listen, man, yeah. Tyson. What Tyson was fed tomato cans. We all watched it. I mean, we all watched that. I mean, it's spectacular.
Well, there was nobody
to
else. There's nobody else to fight, though. That was the issue. I mean, like Michael Spinks was supposed to be put up there as an actual opponent that could hang with Tyson, and he ended him.
Besmirched the good name of Trevor Berbick. Thank you very much. How dare you, sir? Oh, sorry, I think that maybe the better example for boxing. The better example is Roy Jones Jr. Because yeah. Roy was, I mean, he was king of the castle. There was not even a number two or a three. It was just Roy Jones just destroying guys, and he had nobody.
He had to go up and down and wait, right, to find opponents, didn't he? I think that
towards
was
the end, towards the end. But, I mean, he was so far advanced, like so far ahead of everybody else, that it wasn't even funny.
We have Drew Amenda coming up soon. So let's just put a bow around this expansion stuff. And, by the way, the question of the day is, what do you expect to see happen by 2017? How many cities that don't currently have National Hockey League teams will have them? We'll revisit these after we talk to Drew. PuckDaddyBlog@Yahoo.com, Matt Wyshynski, HF America, Twitter, hashtag at MVSW. I think we're going to have two teams by 2017. The question is whether one of those teams will be in Seattle, and the answer is it all depends on whether or not Chris Hansen is turned around on bringing an NHL team in first. And on top of that, whether the city of Seattle allocates the money and the funds to build an arena for a National Hockey League team, because here's the thing, like with the Victor Coleman getting involved with Hansen, there's always a chance that he's going to turn around and be like, I just want to have this arena built for an NBA team. I don't want to lose the opportunity to build this arena. Let's go with hockey first. The real nut to crack is the city. The city has shown no appetite whatsoever to commit public funding to an arena for a hockey team. So that's what you got. You have to get through that. And that's why Bettman and Daly are going up there, not on the reg, but you know, somewhat here and there, at least once, to try to smooth that over, to try to find a way to get the city excited about hockey and free up those funds. Because they want to go to Seattle. They like Seattle better than sure. Vegas, and it's not even a contest. But the problem is they can't get the money for the arena right now, so that's the issue. So I think that Seattle will be a team if they can make it work. I think Vegas is the fallback position if they can't, and I think we get one team in Canada. That's what I think.
Yeah, I think Vegas is still too fraught with too many pitfalls, and the big one is how do you sell season tickets to that base? And it'll be and even if you can't say, oh, well, we're just going to sell season ticket packages to casinos. That very well may be true, but it'll be the most bizarre dynamic in the arena. Because you won't have hometown fans. You just won't. Or in any sizable amount.
It would be Florida.
You'll have the... at least Florida Panthers. There are Florida Panthers fans. I mean, you look at Las Vegas. Anybody who works in Las Vegas is working at night when, oh yeah, the games are on. Secondly, I'm going to go to Vegas the weekend the Maple Leafs are in town. So you go and you watch the Maple Leafs. Who are you cheering for? You're cheering for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I don't know that you're going to get a real significant hometown vibe. Plus, you're going to get things like
that Penn and Teller have hometown fans. No, they have people that come to town to watch a show. And then the team could be
– sports is completely different than going to see Penn and Teller. are going
to... No, I'm just talking about... Dude, wait, when you're talking about the tickets being used as comps, the casinos owning the luxury boxes, everything else, I mean, if 70% of your ticket base is being used by tourists and casinos on behalf of tourists, what do you got? You know?
You don't have a hometown feel to the game.
Right.
That's exactly what I'm saying. It'll be the most unique rink in the NHL. You won't get a hometown vibe. Here come the Las Vegas Bruckheimers, and it'll be flat.
That said, you're going to have a lot of people in the building every night, whether the place is papered or not. It will be sold out every night. And you're going to have a number of players that would not mind playing for the Las Vegas franchise.
And you know what you're going to have? And listen, man. You're going to have – now, the bane of my existence going to a game happens on the power play.
The bane of your existence.
Yeah. When the home team – yeah, 1969, the summer of love. On the power play – okay, really quick. On the power play, the bane of my existence is you hear the hometown fans always screaming, shoot, 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 in Las Vegas, where it's as fueled by gambling as anything else. Will this be the first time in hockey history we'll hear a team on the – we'll have a team on the power play and the entire home audience is chanting, don't shoot, because they have the under? This is the first time, don't shoot, don't shoot.
But again, you forget that no one knows how to bet on hockey. So that's one of the reasons why the NHL can go there. The NFL and the NBA can't. It's because nobody bets on hockey anyway, unless it's for, you know, the odds on who's going to win the Stanley Cup. If I bet the odds on this man getting another job in the National Hockey League as a broadcaster, the odds would have been about, I'd say, like 1-1, maybe 1-9, because he's the best. And he rejoins us now. Now a voice for the Edmonton Oilers, the great Drew Amenda, is back on this podcast. Hi, Drew.
Hi, guys. You know what it was like yesterday when it was announced, though? So Sportsnet announces, Roger Sportsnet announces Craig Simpson, Kelly Rudy, Glenn Healy, PJ Stock, Darren Pang. And it's like there was this vast group of terrific all-star free agents out there. And all the free agents got the big name out there, and they were first on the headline. And then, like a little side note, they also signed this fourth-line journeyman plumber who's really good in the room.
Yeah. That's why you got all that Twitter love yesterday.
Last night I'm in, and by the way, my Twitter password, and I swear I'm going to change it now because I'm going to tell everybody, was "Damn you, Merrick." But now I have to change it now. But last night, I didn't know I had no idea about Twitter, obviously. So last night I'm doing the Warman Sports Celebrity Dinner and Auction, which is a little city outside Saskatoon. We've been doing it for now 8 years, helped build a rink in Warman. I'm now trying to put a second ice surface in there. And we've had some great guests, like just fantastic guests. Kelly Rudy was once there, Brent Butt, Pinball Clemens, Mike Babcock. Nice. It just got better and better. Last night, Anthony Calvillo is the guest speaker. Drew Doughty, Jared Stoller there. Glenn Suter, a great CFL football analyst. G. Roy Simon, Tim Raines. It's just a great group. Ray Williams and Mike McCullough from the Rough Riders. So we had just a great group. And so last night I take a picture at the end with Drew Doughty and Jared Stoll. I've known Jared for years, and I've known Drew a little bit because of he comes to Jared's golf tournament that I MC. So then I put a picture just Jared, Drew Doughty, and me in the middle, and I wrote. I knew this was going to get some reaction. I wrote, two great guys, two great champions, one great night. Okay. Well, Shark fans were a little upset that they think that I finally now just cut all ties with San Jose.
And hang it, yeah. That, well, two things. One, I think everyone was surprised you were hanging out with Los Angeles Kings players. And two, I think everyone was pleasantly surprised that not only are you on Twitter, but you know how to attach a picture already,
no,
Drew.
No, I asked. I got my son to do it.
Okay, there you go. All right, well, no surprise. Well, listen, welcome to two things, Twitter and to Sportsnet. Congrats on the Oilers gig. I mean, listen, I don't think anybody was shocked that you landed on your feet, that, you know, a year wasn't going to go by or a couple of years where Drew Amenda was on the outside looking in. But congrats, bud. Congrats on being back in the game.
Yeah, it's so good in so many different ways. you know, around this time of year, I used to dread that September was coming up because I was leaving my family again. They live in Saskatoon, and I would be in San Jose. It's a 8-hour day to get to San Jose. So you don't get to do it very often. So now I'm going to Edmonton, which is a 5-hour double lane highway from my house on a drive.
Oh,
that's number one.
That's awesome.
Is fantastic. My wife's happy. She can come see me on the weekends. The boys can come see me. I mean, that from a family point of view, it's absolutely great. From a professional point of view, you know, guys, we've all started different jobs in our lives, and I've been with San Jose for 20 years, and sometimes you look back at what you do and you think, boy, that was great 20 years, and it went by fast. But sometimes I would look at the job and go, I'm saying the same things over and over again. Like, there's, you know, you kick in. It was like Anthony Calvillo was talking about last night. Do you keep doing the same things that have led you to where you are, or do you start doing other things in order to get better? And I think this is a great adventure for me, that I can, you know, I got to challenge myself now to get to know the Oilers. I got to get to know some people and get understanding of the way that Dallas Eakins wants his team to play, which I had a great understanding of how Todd McClellan wanted the Sharks to play. But also it's a great challenge for me to get to know the guys and get to be back into a game and re-educating myself to a way that's maybe some other teams play. And I'm really excited about it. I think this is just, I have great respect for Kevin Lowe. I have great respect for Craig McTavish. And, you know, Jeff, you know how much when I think about you and the guys at Sportsnet, you guys were, I know there was some support there from you guys when you kind of kept knocking on Gord Cutler's door. So I'm so grateful for this. And it's been a very interesting summer. I'll tell you that right now.
Well, listen, so, there were a lot of people that went to bat for you, Drew.
Yeah,
don't just single
I know
me out,
a lot of people, which I'm not sure why, but I'm sure grateful about it.
So you have the players and you have the coaches and everybody else. You have that whole aspect of the learning curve. But then you also have this new audience of people.
Yeah.
And it was interesting yesterday to read the reaction to you getting hired and people asking about you. You know, you had Oilers fans asking Sharks fans, what about this guy? You had people being like, oh, I know that name. He was on that video game that one time. when you approach a new audience, I mean, are you now maybe more open to constructive criticism from a new market, or do you just kind of put head down and do what you do and hope that people come around to it?
No, I've never been open to constructive criticism, ever. I don't like it when people criticize me. No, I think, you know.
Get off Twitter, Drew. Drew, get off Twitter. Get off Twitter right now.
That's what I should have asked is, how long do I have to stay on Twitter? But I think the one thing, when I watch Canadian broadcast, and you guys know I watch a ton of hockey, when I watch Canadian broadcast, sometimes I'm dismayed because I think in Canada, oftentimes they miss an opportunity to teach the game. I don't think we should ever, as broadcasters, ever assume that something isn't interesting enough to point out to teach. For example, watch Jordan Eberle, how he uses his edges. I even put the camera on Jordan Eberle for two shifts and watch him go from inside, outside, edge, forward skating to transition, backward skating, and how easily he does it, and understand how a guy uses his edges. It's a small thing, it's a little thing, but for some kid out there who's watching going, oh, wow, look at that. I think there's times when you can teach the game, and you should. Now, I grew up and I worked for Dave King. I worked for George Kingston. Claire Drake for a year was with the San Jose Sharks. I worked for teachers. I worked for guys who wrote the book in Canadian hockey at Hockey Canada on coaching coaches. So I believe in teaching, and I think you should always do that. But on the other hand, I think also I should be open to listening to see, well, what do they do well, though? And there's a lot of things that especially Craig, Kelly Rudy, Glenn Healy, their storytelling is really good. I don't think in Sharks broadcast, because we just took it for granted that everybody knew Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau knew the stories, that we told enough stories about how good these guys are at what they do, or how they got good at what they do, or what interests them, you know, going into a game, how did Joe Thornton become such a passer? You know, so I think that Craig and Kelly and those guys do such a great job telling stories. I think that's something I could incorporate more into my broadcast.
So then what's the most interesting story then on the Oilers right now? I mean, is it Nell Yakupov and that development? Is it the Benoit Pouliot edition, whose, you know, possession numbers are fantastic? Is it the movement towards hockey analytics? What's the most interesting story to you on Oilers this year?
I think there's two. I think the number one interesting story is the top forwards. Everybody knows how offensively gifted they are. But if you watch the NHL playoffs, and I know we all did, you have to understand that this game is you have to be just as quick and just as intense and just as dynamic away from the puck as you are with the puck. And if you look at the Oilers in the last little while, that's been a weakness of theirs. That, yeah, when they get the puck, holy mackerel, are those guys good, and are they dangerous, and all of a sudden your team's on your heels. Can you bring that to your defensive game? Will that structure get into your game? And tell me where and how you've learned that and how you're going to develop that and incorporate that in your game. And I also think, as much as I, you know, you try to keep it about what's going on the ice, I think Dallas Eakins is going to be, and his new staff is going to be a really compelling story, because you'd have to admit that Dallas was humbled last year, came in for great high marks from the Marlies, did a great job in the Toronto organization, was really coveted by the media, and Craig McTavish let a very good coach in Ralph Kruger go. Now he brings in Dallas Eakins, and things don't go well. And if you talk to Paul Maurice, and I know you guys have him, Paul's such an interesting and articulate guy and smart. I asked him when he first got the job in the NHL, what's different about him now when he got the job in Winnipeg than when he got the job in the NHL. He said, when I was 29 years old, I turned that job down four times to Jim Rutherford because I knew I wasn't ready. So when I got the job, I jumped in as a young guy, and it was all about X's and O's. And I got to it, and I started going X's and O's all the time. I just strategy. And now I know it's a people business. As an older guy, as a coach, it's being able to communicate. And what made that really crystal clear to Paul Maurice was the fact that when he was in Russia, his Russian experience, when he wanted to say something to somebody, he couldn't because they didn't speak the language. So he couldn't communicate what he wanted to say. So he said that really crystallized it for him that it's a people business. And I think Dallas, like I said, was humbled a little bit last year, knew guy coming in, a rookie coach coming into a young, dynamic team with high expectations, and I think he's going to have to find a way to make it more of a people business, and I think that's going to be an interesting evolution to watch.
From a broadcasting perspective, I am up late all the time. I know that everybody thinks that we're all East Coast bias purveyors and everything else,
yeah,
but
guys, yeah.
I don't really sleep, and also I tend to get stuck with doing the three stars for Puck Daddy on nights when there's a lot of West Coast action. So I love listening to you and Randy, and specifically I always loved when you would get a chance to go off on tangents about the league, and it would be a stoppage in play or whatever, and one of you would bring up the topic of the day, whether it's illegal hitting or what have you, and have a chance to really kind of bring that opinion talk into the hockey broadcast, but not do it in a way that overshadowed the game. Are you going to still be able to be that candid? Can you be that guy with the Oilers? Have you been given any parameters about that kind of stuff?
Not yet. I guess I'll find out.
We have our seminar in 2 weeks, Drew. We'll find out then.
We'll see if I think when people tune into a broadcast, I want to hear opinion. One of the best tools to help me develop as a broadcaster was my radio show that I did here in Saskatoon. I mean, the one thing that I was told was, you're the host, and the host is never wrong. Now, you didn't actually ever have to tell me that, because if anybody knows me, I think I'm never wrong about anything. But I think you should be able to voice an opinion, because people on the broadcast, when they're watching a hockey game, they're not just Oiler fans. They're not just Canuck fans. They're not just Flame fans. Yes, they've got their favorite team, but they're hockey fans. The one thing about hockey fans that's maybe a little different from some of the other sports out there is that, yeah, we love our team, but we love the game. And they want to know what you think about that last hit. Like, they want to know why you think that Nick Cronwell shouldn't have got suspended or should have got suspended for a hit from behind. They want to know what you're thinking on these issues. There's a bunch of issues out there that we all, if we go into a coffee shop, we're all going to sit and we're going to start talking about, whether the trapezoid really is a good idea. Why are we hitting so many hits from behind? Why aren't these players getting better evaluated when it comes to concussions? What is ever happening is happening. When is the NHL, and the officiating going to get hand in hand where they're just officials are just as good as the players? All those types of things. So I think they want to hear it. You mentioned, though, without overshadowing the game, there would be times that I would overshadow the games. And that's the one thing I as I got older and I got yelled at enough, that I finally stopped. Maybe I'll just, after like one break, I shouldn't take it through like three breaks. I should just let it go, say what I want to say, and then let it go.
Yeah, 2 years and one mouth. To Oilers issues and the news of the day around Oilers camp, Justin Schultz signs the one-year contract.
Yeah.
I know some fans wanted something a little bit longer for someone who they feel may be a cornerstone on the blue line. One-year contract, $3.675 million is the compensation. Good deal, bad deal? How do you read this one for the third-year pro?
Well, I don't even know how to read contracts anymore. Do you guys? I really don't.
Well.
I mean, you have to look at it as a comparable in the market. Is it a bridge deal? I think it's a little high, but that's okay, because you do believe he is going to be a cornerstone on your blue line. Unfortunately, you only get him for 1 year, but that's, you know what? You got him. I look at contracts now and I'm kind of perplexed. Yesterday, a guy tweeted you, Jeff, and, when it was announced, and he was obviously a long memory, because when the Taylor Hall and Jordan Eberle contracts came out, I was very public and said on many occasions on various shows, I can't believe they gave those two guys that long and that much money. There was no bridge contract. It was bang, we're going to go right to that. And some guy with a long memory from an Edmonton owner said, ask him if he still thinks that $6 million at 7 years is too much. And I looked at it and I went, you know what, you got me. You're right. Nowadays, NHL, in the way the cap is going, and as good as players as Taylor Hall and Jordan Eberle are, then, boy, you know what? You're absolutely right. That is a pretty reasonable deal for those guys. 1 year, I think, is maybe gives an indication of what Justin Schultz is thinking, but it also shows the Edmonton Oilers also show that, Justin, we're interested in you. We're giving you a little bit more than probably you deserve based on your track record. But it also maybe it's an investment in the future. We're going to invest a little bit more in you in the future. But right now we're expecting more from you. I think that message from that amount of money is an expectations from the Oilers that we are expecting you to take that next jump. The third year pro, it's tough to play that position in the NHL and really as a young player kind of get it down, get it mastered. But you should be starting now. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I also think they got boned a little bit because, like, you know, it's such a unique situation with Schultz because he was a free agent. They had to bonus up the contract in order to entice him to get there, along with getting him the ice time that he was looking for. So it kind of speaks to what Merrick was talking about on an earlier show this month, which was, what if we got rid of the draft and just had free agents all over the place? This Schultz thing is that kind of situation where his entry-level contract was probably a bit higher than it would have been had they drafted him. And so the starting point for this bridge deal was going to be higher than it would have been for another rookie.
I agree with you. And so if you have nothing but free agents, then everything would be higher, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly, Merrick. That's why you're completely batshit about this idea.
Well, okay, and that's fine and dandy, but last time I checked, everybody had to come in under the salary cap.
Right. That's true, but the salary cap keeps going up. Up and up and up. Well, thanks a lot to Rogers and for this deal. No, seriously. I'm sitting with Drew Doughty and Jared Stoll. I love Jared Stoll to death. I mean, I think the world of Jared. I've known him for quite a few years now. So Drew Doughty goes, are you going to Rogers, eh? And Jared turns, looks at Drew and goes, that's why your salary cap went up. I said, because of me? And he goes, no, because of Rogers.
Because of Rogers.
No, man. Wait
till it's damn Rogers. That's why we're paying so much on our frickin' escrow. Well, escrow's at 20%. Rogers starts getting taking bullets for it.
I guess there'd be certain guys. I mean, when I look at contracts now, I always, and because I'm old now, but I hearken back to when Joe Sakic got that first big money. You know, when he got the restricted free agent offer sheet from the Rangers.
Yeah.
By that time, he had already played 600 games. He had already had over 800 points. He had already won a Stanley Cup, was the most valuable player. He had won a scoring race. He was established as a player, and then he got this big deal. He had made his mark. He had set the bar. And now you've got guys who haven't scored 100 goals in the National Hockey League getting long-term ridiculous contracts. You know, P.K. Subban is a really talented player, without a doubt. But holy mackerel, how doesn't that money change a person? Dean Lombardi talked about it when Drew Doughty was holding out. I remember him coming on. I think it was on primetime. Bob Cowan and Dean was talking about the problem he has with throwing this kind of money at Doughty. They don't have any doubt in his talent, and they certainly didn't have any doubt about his character and the type of person he is. But he was worried. He said, for a young man, this type of money changes somebody. It has to. Now with Doughty, it's made him, you know, a great player he is, but it's certainly when you give a young man a ton of money and long term without him having to worry about it, doesn't it have to change a player?
Do you think that it's interesting? Do you think that with the we've lived with the salary cap going back to 2005, but the salary cap sort of now, and we're seeing the fruit of it, has necessitated teams to look for value for every single dollar they spend. Do you think that has now given rise to, as we call it now, the summer of analytics, where you really need to be able to come up with some type of formula to justify every single dollar you are spending?
I think it has, but here's where I think analytics is really interesting. I'm name-dropping like crazy today, so I apologize. I saw Mike Babcock a couple weeks ago, and I asked him about – he was being asked at the table that I was at with him about analytics, and he said – analytics are great as long as you're using your eyes to develop those analytics. So you're not just taking the NHL stats, which we all know are rather questionable from rink to rink. If you're using your eyes and you're watching video and you're cooperating it with your video and breakdown and you're looking at guys and breaking them down using the analytics, it's great. He said the other aspect is Mike talks to a lot of companies, and he meets with a lot of CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. Every one of those companies uses analytics. And so you've got these multi-millionaires and billionaires who are running these clubs who, with their other businesses, are running them like a business, using analytics in whatever capacity they can, understanding that numbers, are really what we're looking at. And then they go to a general manager in the NHL and they go, well, tell me about this guy. Tell me what he does well. And you say, like I said, well, he's a great guy. He's terrific in the room. It's like Moneyball. He looks like a hockey player. He's got that nice natural skating stride. And your owner should be looking at you going, okay, but what is he? Show me exactly what he does. So I think if you use the video and you use analytics, it helps, I think, general managers and assistant general managers make those personnel decisions. For coaches, I don't think analytics is going to be as groundbreaking or as a new type of instrument or tool that they can use in order to coach their teams. I think it's more for management and making the proper personnel decisions than it is for coaches and even making on the fly instantaneous game decisions about who am I playing in this situation.
Interesting. Last one for me, Drew. Did you get a chance to see the hubbub about the warning track along
yes.
the boards?
Yeah,
that was going on. What are your thoughts about this? If you haven't seen it, folks, it's a orange stripe that extends from the boards out that is supposed to be kind of a warning track, not only for players to know where they are on the ice, but also for players that are trying to hit them to know that they're in a dangerous spot on the ice to administer a hit.
I don't want to quash anything that has a safety measure to it that is going to protect our players. But wouldn't it behoove us as coaches and people who teach young players to generationally start to get them to understand about the dynamics of the rink, not only one as an aggressive defensive player trying to make a play and take the puck from a guy, but also as an offensive player, making sure I don't get my toes pointed directly at the boards, that I get turned up in the ice, that I know where my pressure is coming from, that I am aware as a hockey player of my surroundings. I think maybe it could be a great training tool. Would it hurt in the NHL? No, it wouldn't hurt anybody. You have another marking on the ice, big deal. I'm not sure how much it would really help players at that level, because they're going to go at you, especially in the playoffs, they're going to go at you and they're going to try to put you through the boards. But if we taught the younger players, and I teach hockey school in the summers, as you guys know, and I'm out in the ice all the time, and we talk a lot to the kids about going into the boards, shoulder checking, making sure you get your feet turned up or back, that the boards are your friend, that if you're racing for a puck, the better thing is, instead of getting there first, is to slow down a little bit, bring that forechecker on your rear end, get them right on top of you, and then when you get to the boards, you can shift left or right, and you can avoid the hit and maintain puck control. I think there's more things we can do as coaches in order to make players better aware and better skilled at adapting to their surroundings and playing in tight areas than if we put more markings on the ice to say, don't hit a guy here, or put a stop jersey on his back and going, don't hit a guy in the back.
Well, that's what I was going to go to as well, Drew, because as we saw across Canada for so many years, we thought the stop sign on the back of the jerseys, that was going to be the panacea. That was going to end it all. That was going to remind everybody, oh, I see that stop sign. I'm not going to hit. But as well as, you know, I mean, you coach these kids.
Yeah.
That just blends it. That's as much part of the jersey as the number
absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely.
It doesn't mean anything anymore.
Plus, the Canadians never realized how many people roll through stop signs. I mean, honestly, that's
Hey, Drew, last one here, and I want to take this back to the University of Calgary. Who was on the bench with you when you were at University of Calgary coaching?
Okay, I got to tell you this story. So I'm working at Hockey Canada, and yep. I'm working for Dave King and Mike Johnson. And Mike Johnson is the video coordinator, and I am his assistant. And Willie DeJardin was the head coach.
There you
and
go.
Mike Johnson was assistant coach. I was also like a lowly assistant. And the great Steve Carlisle, former WHA Edmonton Oiler. So this summer, Willie gets the job with the Vancouver Canucks as head coach. Yeah. Mike gets the job with Pittsburgh Penguins as head coach. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so they happen rather quickly in front of each other. My sons, Davis and Donovan, 17-year-olds, and I'm watching, and I looked at both of them. I said, you know, I coached with Willie DeJardin in Calgary, and I coached with Mike Johnson as well. And they both looked at me and said, yeah, how do you feel right now? And I went, what? And they looked at me and she went, you are such a loser. And I was, you know, 17-year-old kids, so wait a second. They go, no, Dad. How do you feel right now?
That's awesome. That's how they
get
great
Johnson,
kids.
Mike Johnson, Willie DeJardin, two wonderful, really smart hockey guys who just absolutely get it. I think they're going to be fantastic in both their positions.
Yeah, there's so many. Like when you look at, you know, University of Calgary, George Kingston
George
there
Kingston,
as well?
University of Calgary, then Willie DeJardin, Mike Johnson. That one year that we were there, it was Willie, Mike, Steve Carlisle, me, and then remember Big Terry Johnson, the former defenseman of the Calgary Flames? Remember Big Terry
Johnson?
He came in after Mike Johnson. No. Claire Drake was University of Alberta. Wayne Fleming, University of Manitoba. Barry Trotz was there as well. There are so many good coaches in the CIS. Dave King coached CIS of the Huskies. George Kingston, as I mentioned. There are so many great CIS coaches. Jean Perron coached the University of Moncton. It was at a time that's where all the coaches were coming from because those are the coaches who actually taught coaches how to coach.
Andy Murray, right? And Brandon.
Right. Sorry, geez, Andy Murray, the great Andy Murray, without a doubt. Yeah.
Well, now, did Perry Pern, I'm getting off on a tangent, but was Perry
Nate.
Pern involved? Perry Pern?
He was at NAIT, Northern Alberta Institute.
Northern
Alberta
Institute. Right.
That was a technical college. So he was there.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some great coaches, boy, coming out. And now Perry's with Willie. That's another Alberta connection right there. When it was all Hockey Canada, Dave King kind of – it's like the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon game. It's like the six degrees of Dave King.
All right, throw Timmy Bothwell into that one as well.
That's right, Timmy Bothwell,
Tim was
University of Calgary after. That's right.
All right, that's our little geeky tangent. Talk nerdy to me, as they say. Listen, Drew, congratulations again. So great to have you part of the mix on Sportsnet. Analyst for the Edmonton Oilers. Looking forward to you and Kevin with the call this season. Take care. We'll chat soon.
Thanks, guys. Great talking to you.
There he is. As you call him, the great Drew Remenda, now part of the Evil Empire.
His reaction to that whole thing with the warning track stripe is kind of mine, too. Like, it's hard to really take a run at, you know, again, to turn an unfortunate phrase, take a run at something that's ostensibly for player safety. But I'm with you. Like, the dude who invented it and has proliferated it said it's not meant for the referees to use to call penalties. It's not supposed to be a guide for them. But inevitably, that's what it's going to be. I mean, there's no question about there, is there?
Well, yeah, because fans will start chanting. I mean, and you'll hear it when there's hits around that area.
He was in the orange.
He was in the, you can't hit there. Oh, it's going to be Brett Hull foot in the crease all over again. See, the problem, the issue for me when I first saw it, and I was on, had my little stump speech about this last year on the podcast, and I'll continue to say it. I think this is a further evolution. The fact that it's even being discussed and getting concert and finding sympathetic ears, to me, again, reaffirms something that I've believed now for a number of years. We're starting to see the beginnings right now of the end of board hitting, where the boards are used as an object to hit a player against, or the boards are used, you know, as a weapon. I think that's the beginning of this thing, that we're starting to see the beginning of the end of board hitting, where it'll only be, you're only allowed to hit a player at open ice. And if this does indeed become true, Oh, man. Then all the play just revolves around the boards because that's a safe area, and that's the area where you can't get hit because you can't get hit in the boards. I hope it doesn't go that way, but we all saw what happens when you change the rules a tiny little bit. There are unforeseen things that happen. Like, look at Rule 48 and what Rule 48 turned into eventually. No one saw Rule 48 turning into what it's become now, because once upon a time it was just get rid of that Matt Cook on Mark Savard hit, and now we have this. And right. That's fine. It's all player safety, and I get that, and the guys are more protected out there. But when you start to see, you know, the warning track around the boards, you know, my initial thought is, okay, so what's the next step, and where is it heading? And to me, it's that's it. No more board hitting in hockey. Too dangerous.
Indeed. Here, friends, is where we transition to Jeff Merrick's favorite portion of the weekly broadcast.
Is this where I apologize to everyone who hates this segment?
This is where you own up to the fact that when my magic podcasting box failed me at my parents' house earlier this week, you evidently went on a diatribe about how Game Show Friday was done without my knowledge.
No, all I said was, you know, let's have a sober reflection on this thing, Wish, and your silence will speak if you choose to withhold your words. Game Show Friday, yay or nay? And I didn't know that you were gone. I was just enjoying some silence. And yeah,
thanks,
so
Dave Gahan.
That was it, and you'd put it to bed.
Yeah. Well, with that, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for a Friday favorite.
It's Game Show Friday.
So, in keeping with the Jeff Merrick version of Game Show Friday, we are inviting someone on who was the seventh emailer that we received earlier today, but we are not going to give this individual a quiz based on what we would like to have the quiz be about, but instead the listener has the chance, the opportunity to dictate terms to us on what the quiz content should be. So ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Gray Wilcox to the show. Hello, Gray.
What's up, fellas? How's it going?
Hello.
It's Hello. Going well. Your the poison you picked for Game Show Friday is the EA Sports NHL series video game. Obviously, EA Sports NHL 15 is coming out next week. The early reviews of their demo are ridiculously positive. It all looks very spiffy. And if you check Puck Daddy today, the commercials featuring Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand doing some musical promotion for NHL 15 are quite hilarious. So we thought this would be an ample tie-in with all that stuff, and you, friend, will get a chance to answer 10 questions about the EA Sports NHL series. Okay?
All right. I'm stoked. Let's do it.
As you know, Gray, we demand a D average from our listeners. If you get 6 of 10, that means you're the big winner. Matt will give you a big prize from the Sportsnet prize closet. By the way, I don't know if you knew this, but because of the NHL contract, the Sportsnet prize closet may in fact be a watermelon rind. It could be a used coffee cup from Doug
banana
McLean.
Banana
peel, yeah. There really isn't a whole lot left in the budget for prizes these days.
Yeah, empty GP8 sport water bottle. That might be up there too.
I'll take what I can get at this point.
An unopened Darren Millard a can from trade deadline. It was a beer can, right?
Yeah, Coors Light. Yeah, the Coors Light. Coors Light, yeah. Beer cans. Yeah. Yeah, you like those?
Yeah, go.
They're great. I can go for it.
All right, great. So EA Sports, the game we'll play today, quick and dirty, you should be able to manage it quite well, I imagine, is Cover No Cover. As you can probably tell from the title of this game, I will name an athlete from the National Hockey League, and you tell me whether or not they ever appeared on any cover for an EA Sports NHL game, including the international editions. Are you ready to play, sir?
Ooh.
This could be tough, but I'm ready.
I'm sorry. Did you think it'd be a giant wank off where I would just ask who's going to be on the...
It's not a Merrick quiz because there's no way I'd get any of Merrick's questions.
Well, luckily for you, Gray.
True. Come on.
Luckily for you, Gray, you picked something that involves technology, so Merrick does not know from it all that much.
The last technology I was familiar with was the curving of the hockey stick. That's it. After that, I tuned out.
He's like, curious, Gray, in Atari 2600's ice hockey, how many
such
players were on the
asshole,
ice? Actually, that's a good question. That's a good question. In Atari 2600's ice hockey, how many players were on the ice? Do you know that question, the answer, Gray?
Two.
Ah, close. Four. I believe it was four. I believe it was a forward and a defenseman who would then go back to cover the goal. So there wasn't even a goalie in Atari 2020. That was a bonus question. That wasn't actually counting towards your total, although I wish it did. All right, here we go. I will name an athlete. You tell me whether or not they appeared on the cover of an EA Sports NHL game, either in North America or abroad. Question number one, Kelly Rudy.
Kelly Rudy? I'm going to go no cover.
Well, I see we're off to a swimmingly great start. He, of course, was the cover model for the 1991 Sega Genesis Classic NHL. The first NHL game
the
that
first
EA Sports
one.
Produced. So that was a no there. Alexei Kovalev, question number two.
Alexei Kovalev. I'll go with no cover.
But yeah, but somehow my questions were hard.
Incorrect again. Alexei Kovalev was on the cover of NHL 95. You are 0 for 2 to get off.
Come on, Greg.
You're 0 for 2.
All right, all right.
It's only when we get to question 3 that we start to descend into the abyss. Question number 3, cover, no cover, Shea Weber.
Shea Weber. No cover.
No cover is correct. Not at all. Not even a sniff
not
of a cover. He plays for Nashville, for goodness sakes.
No noise.
Cover, no cover. Number 4, Christopher Pronger.
Pronger, yes, cover.
Cover. NHL 2000 was the cover for Chris Pronger. You are now 2 for 4. Question number 5. Tuomo Ruutu, cover, no cover.
Tuomo. Sounds like international. I'll go with cover.
That's a great guess. Why in the name of God's sakes, what the hell would I ever pick Tuomo Ruutu for if not for the fact that he was on the cover of the European Union edition of NHL 06 while playing with the Chicago Blackhawks? That's good question know-how. You must have participated in bar trivia once or twice in your life to know how cunning that question was to be asked at number 5. Number 6, Daniel Alfredsson, cover, no cover.
Alfredsson, I'll go with cover.
Cover is correct. NHL 09 in Sweden was Daniel Alfredsson.
Oh.
Mike Modano, question number 7.
Sadly, Modano never graced the cover.
Never graced the cover. Could only play the game with his friends whilst watching Steve Yzerman and Joe Sakic get on the covers of their editions.
Little speed wobble to kick it off, but man, Gray is on a roll. 2, 4,
he's
five.
He's on a roll now. He's gotten himself 5 in a row. Randy Moeller, cover, no cover.
Moeller, I'm going to go with no cover.
You know, it's funny. You were so good on the Ruutu question. Why the hell would I ask about Tuomo Ruutu? Why the hell would I ask about Randy Moeller if he wasn't on the cover of NHLPA 93, seen pushing Rod Brind'Amour in front of Mike Richter?
But that was okay. All right.
What were you going to say, Greg? Shit. Go for it.
That was a multi-cover. That wasn't like an individual cover.
It almost sounded like Gray was mouthing off to me, mouthing off to his
quizmaster,
because he didn't appreciate the cunningness of my question. I don't quite know why that would be. All right, so you're still on 5. That's fine. You've got 2 more chances to get to 6 and win the big prize. Matt Sundin, cover, no cover.
Sundin, no way, no cover.
That is correct. No cover from Matt Sundin. Had he only requested a trade earlier from the Maple Leafs or agreed to a trade earlier, mayhaps he would have gotten on the cover as a member of another team. But yes, no cover from Matt Sundin. You've reached 6, which brings us to the final question. You've already qualified for the prize. This is all for shits and giggles. Jeremy Roenick, cover, no cover. Roenick, of course, the most famous player in EA Sports NHL history, but did he ever grace the cover of a game?
No, never did.
Oh, yeah? Want to try again?
Actually, the answer is yes, he did.
What?
You're incorrect. Jeremy Roenick was featured on the cover of NHLPA 93. Now, why is that? We don't remember him being on the cover at all. Well, NHL 93 was an NHLPA game.
Right.
It was a game that on the cover couldn't feature any of the NHL logos and such. So to make sure everyone knew that the game was a big deal and wouldn't be some generic knockoff of an NHL game, they featured little tiny pictures of several athletes, including Patrick Waugh, including others, including a headshot of Jeremy Roenick. So yes, in fact, his face has graced the cover of an EA Sports NHL game, though his entire body may not have.
Roenick in by technicality. All right.
Damn.
You still won.
You still
won.
So edgy.
Yeah.
So edgy.
Right?
So edgy.
I like it.
Man.
You're supposed to be happy on a Friday. What are y'all pissy about today, Gray?
I'm stoked. No, I'm happy. This is awesome. The best thing of my day was that I was going to be on Game Show Friday, which is a great thing. You got to keep doing it. You can't stop the Game Show Friday.
Oh, no, he's making a lot of sense now. Said the guy that just won.
Said the guy that just won Game Show Friday wants to keep it. Miraculous.
Barely, though. I'll admit, I thought that someone who requests to see the EA Sports, to have EA Sports NHL series be the subject of Game Show Friday would at least have the common sense to go to the Wikipedia page and follow along like I did and see who was on the cover of all the games. But you decided to play it straight, and then there's a modicum of respect that I have for you in doing that, but I also think that was putting you at a competitive disadvantage. But you did get the six, you got the prize, and that's a very exciting thing for you, I'm sure.
Well, I am stoked. I'm very stoked.
All right, now we get to the point of the show where we ask you who your favorite team is.
The Dallas Stars.
Oh, interesting. Ooh, so this is going to be a very exciting year for you, huh?
Oh, yes, very exciting year. Looking forward to it very much.
If you had
Hold on.
Let me ask him first. If you had to pick one, who will end up with more points this year, Tyler Seguin or Jamie Benn?
That's tough. I think it's going to be Seguin. But it's going to be close. And I don't know. I hope. I've got Seguin on my fantasy league, so I'm keeping him. And I'm hoping that he scores a ton of points.
I agree with you on that. I think Seguin probably ends up with more points than Ben. I think you know, the people saying Seguin could possibly challenge for the Art Ross aren't too far off, depending on how the power play looks this year for Dallas.
Totally. So I mean, he's the top dog, and he can score as well as playmake, so he's not just one-dimensional. He's a multi-dimensional guy.
Yes, more than one dimension, three dimensions at the very least. Merrick, you had a question for him?
I have a ton of questions about the Dallas Stars this year. Last year was one of my favorite teams to watch. This year will probably be the same. Where's Colton Sevier on this team?
It sounded like he's going to make the squad, probably fourth line. I'm excited that Vern Fiddler's coming back.
Yep.
He could maybe challenge for some, like, higher minute roles, but it's looking like he's going to be a fourth liner this year.
Okay,
but I think he will make the club. I'm more excited to see Brett Ritchie, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's my follow-up question. So let me throw some names out at you. Brett Ritchie, Radek Faxa, Scott Glennie, Curtis McKenzie. Who makes this team?
The long-gestating Scott Glennie.
Glennie's been around for a while. I don't know if Glennie's going to bust up to the big club. I think it's going to be Ritchie and McKenzie.
Well, I'll tell you what. Brett Ritchie makes his team. That gets really interesting the next time they face the Anaheim Ducks, if Nick Ritchie makes a team, because watching those two kids, the two brothers, go head-to-head will be
of
primo-esque proportions. Like, I've been waiting now for a few years for that Colorado-Dallas rivalry to flare up again, and hopefully this is a season where it really gets going again. But, man, the Ritchie against Ritchie between Anaheim and Dallas could be special, too. Two big boys.
Yeah, I'm looking.
And here's another one. Can they move Gonchar?
Oh God, I hope so. I mean, I love that he's here and he's, like, you know, mentoring Nichushkin, which is great. But that contract and those skates and those bad passes, it's just, I kind of want him gone. But I don't know anybody's gonna take him.
Nope, not at that ticket. That's a tough one.
Yeah. No, he's great. He's wonderful. No, he's amazing. We don't want to let him go.
All right, last one for me. Your favorite Dallas Star is whom?
Oh, man. Well, when I started really getting into the Stars back in, like, 2007, it was Nicholas Hagman.
Oh, wow.
Why Nicholas Hagman?
The hustle on the forecheck, like, just
yeah,
willing to play any you know, line that was given to him. He could score. Just a lot of hustle. I just loved his energy.
Interesting. Very good. Finally for me, sir, the question of the day was, of course, what NHL cities that do not have teams will have them by 2017? Do you have any opinion on that?
The obvious choice is, you know, Quebec City. They deserve one. I'd love to see another one in Toronto just to, you know, compete with the Leafs. And I love the idea of calling them the Rakes. That's genius.
thank you.
Seattle. And I just don't know if Vegas works. You know, you need a fan base to support a team. And if you're in Vegas, I just don't know if that's a good fan base.
That's the question, yeah, that's whether they could actually develop a strong fan base or if it's just going to be another novelty, entertainment novelty out there. All right, Gray, you were great.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Gray.
You put on a great show. I see many messages from listeners as we speak talking about how what a huge success Game Show Friday is, and I feel like you've helped us out to that end.
Yeah, do
it again. Those only go to you. Those only go to you for some reason, Wish. Just
right,
quick
man.
Look at my timely. Yeah, no, not.
Oh, hey, Gray, are you still there?
No. I'm still here.
Gray, still there?
Yeah.
Give out your Twitter handle so everybody can congratulate.
Oh yeah, I'm Gray with an A is the color. And if I could do a couple shout-outs.
Go ahead.
First and foremost, my wonderful girlfriend, April, who has developed an immense love for hockey. My EASHL club, the AKs, Virus, Big Cat, Wild, Portales, Soups, Solo, Walrus, Flintstone, Prongs, and Kirk. All my
all
friends
top
in the Dallas
head,
Stars
right?
organization. You got to stop me there?
No, I was going to say this is all off the top of your head, too, right?
Oh, totally. There's not a list right in front of me right here. Cameron Berard, Jason Walsh, Doug Foster, Ralph and Razor, Mike Heike, Twitter genius Alex Serta, everyone at Defending Big D, and all my friends at my workplace, Charlie Tango, James Mary Alice, Jake, Chris, and Nick, and Carrie, even though she is a Blackhawks fan. Okay,
let me ask you a question about...
Playing the music
hold on.
Get me off.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Here comes a novelty cane. So was your girlfriend a hockey fan before she met you? How did that work?
No, she was not. We met through roller derby, and so she was in roller derby.
Brilliant. What was her name?
Hang on.
June Meat Cleaver. Yeah, and her number was 409.
Oh, that's great! I once partied with someone from roller derby whose roller derby name was she was such a cool chick too. Mustang Sally, that was it.
Nice.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, Mustang
brilliant.
Sally. Yeah, she was such a cool chick.
Yeah, I know. So I mean, April was she didn't really care about sports, and then you know she knew how. Yeah. How much I loved hockey, and so she kind of got into it. And there were days I'd come home from work, and she'd be like, oh, did you hear about this or that? And I was like, what? Who are you? So she's a fan.
Awesome. Well, welcome to Dallas Stars Hockey, April.
Yeah, that's right. Go Stars.
All right, great. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us, man. Take care.
Thank you, guys.
The great Gray Wilcox joining us and doing a bang-up job on Game Show Friday. A couple of emails before we head off for the exciting Labor Day weekend. For is Monday a holiday in Canada, too?
Yes, we have something called Labor Day as well.
Oh, it's also your Labor Day?
Yeah. Yep.
Well, that's exciting. So everybody and will then, have a big old day off on Monday, probably, right?
Pretty. Yeah, and then the next day, our oldest goes to kindergarten.
Oh yeah, my Vivian goes to pre-K that day as well. That's exciting on Tuesday.
Yeah,
and it's her first time wearing a uniform to school, so that'll be really exciting.
TJ wants to wear like a superhero uniform, or he has a police uniform that he likes, or a fireman uniform that he likes.
She has an actual uniform to wear to school, which means that I can look forward to an hour explaining to her why she can't wear her effing Frozen T-shirt. To school. Now she's in a different class.
But what about therapy. Elsa? I don't care about Elsa. Put this on. Go to school.
Couple of emails about expansion by 2017. This is from Olivia Ordonez. Long-time listener, first-time write-in. While there's a temptation to say we'll have two new teams in the West, even the conferences without realignment, and you don't run into the time zone problem that led to Detroit and Columbus being sent east, don't you think you have to put a second team in Toronto to fund the NHL's expansion failure in Vegas? I'll add that I think an existing franchise relocates to Quebec City, already building an arena for an Olympic bid. First of all, it's a very funny line, and as you know, I'm very much in support of a team in Toronto. I think that's even more so than Seattle top of my list. The relocation wrinkle here is an interesting one because honestly, dude, like you're going to be able to find an owner in Toronto and an owner in Quebec that will pay whatever you want them to pay to get into this league via expansion fees and via, in Toronto's case, the territorial rights that they're going to have to pony up.
One might already suspect that that owner is already an owner of a hockey team in Toronto.
You think one of the media companies would break off and own the other team?
I kind of see that as the long-term play here. Like, I mean, it's been called the unholy marriage or the unholy partnership, you know, since pretty much day one when Bell and Rogers got together to purchase MLSE. So I don't think it would surprise anybody if sooner than later, if the Toronto expansion situation gathers some steam, if one of them buys the other side out of their portion of MLSE, and one team ends up with the expansion team, one side ends up with the expansion team, and one side ends up with the Maple Leafs.
Interesting.
And they both play at the Air Canada Center.
But who ends up with the Leafs is the question. I mean, like, who ends up with the biggest brand out?
Yeah.
Maybe the biggest brand in hockey.
Right. That is the question. Yeah. 100%. 100%.
All right. Well, that's why I think at the end of the day, I mean, I think Bell and Rogers will continue to co-own the Leafs. And the Score app will be the expansion team.
I saw that. Yeah, you put that out there. Score app owns the expansion team.
And someone thought that was a shot at Josh.
Is the GM. Josh Goldsmith was the general manager.
Yeah, somebody thought that was a shot at Josh. No, I'm just having fun with the fact that, you know, there's two giant media, the two biggest media conglomerates in Canadian sports are owning one team, so it leaves the other
and
one
the
to kind of, you know, pick up the pieces. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
that's what I was saying. We love Josh. Matt, we love you too. Don't worry. I was just going for awkward silence there for a second. Mike Barber writes in, Quebec City will definitely have a team in the Central Division by 2017, with the Pacific Division getting one of Seattle, Vegas, or if the other two can't make arena and ownership situations happen, Portland. Quebec is in the Central, you ask? The NHL made Tampa Bay play its inaugural season in the West, and a relocated Winnipeg team spent 2 years in the Southeast. A Quebec ownership group would gladly take an expansion team in the Central as a stopgap solution before the league's next realignment. Yeah, I could see that happening with Toronto or Quebec City, where they spend a little bit of time in the Central Division before they get realigned whenever the NHL decides to do something else with its playoff format. The Portland thing's interesting. Alan Muir of Sports Illustrated said that if relocation happened before Seattle got their arena situation sorted out, the fact that billionaire Paul Allen is looking for a sports property in Portland to go along with the Trailblazers, would an NHL team in Portland be a possibility for a realignment? So I thought it was interesting.
Support junior hockey very well, thanks very much. And again, the Portland Winterhawks should be an outstanding team this year.
And if you get Portland and Seattle and Vancouver up there, that's a nice little stronghold for the NHL up in the Pacific Northwest.
Not a bad thought. Yep. I mean, listen, the Western Hockey League has a U.S. division. Some teams do very well. Portland, I'm looking your direction. Other teams don't do very well in that one. But it's always, I mean, whether it's Spokane or Tri-Cities or Portland and Seattle, I mean, it's always really competitive, right? And I've never... Every now and then you do hear the sort of, you know, markets popping up and we got to move and we're not getting the attendance, and it happens every now and then, but not with the same frequency that it does in other trouble spots around the Western Hockey League. Like Lethbridge.
Do you ever, someone emailed in to ask about the performance of the attendance performance by the Las Vegas Wranglers of the ECHL in Las Vegas. Do you ever think that minor league hockey or junior hockey, because you mentioned the Winterhawks, do you ever think that's like a harbinger of future support or success for an NHL team, or do you think that they're different animals and we shouldn't hockey thrives here and an NHL team would then thrive here as well?
I see. I'm a little colored on it because, you know, being in Toronto and watching various junior hockey teams flounder in that market, I've always come shy of saying, well, if junior hockey, you know, doesn't work, that means it's a bad hockey market, because the number one hockey market in Canada, you know, can't support a junior hockey team. Fans just don't go. I think it depends on the sports perspective and the sports expectation of that marketplace. You really have to go market to market. I don't think you can read a whole lot into, well, Saskatoon, you know, packs the building, therefore they should be able to support an NHL team. I wouldn't go that far. It depends on market to market.
Indeed. All right. Well, that is the show for today and for the week. Well, I guess we'll figure out when we're going to do this again. I don't think maybe
next week for me is tough. Yeah.
We'll figure it out.
I got a bunch of stuff that I'm taping. for some.
Monday's a day of off for I think everybody, so we won't do it then. But we'll figure out next week at some point. We'll come back on and do another show. People seem to like the show, so I think we should probably, you know, do it.
Can we lock in Friday for sure? I think Friday's really good for me next week.
Yeah, Friday should work. I have a wedding that night, but I'll double check. Let me double check on the wedding stuff and make sure I'm going to be able to make it there.
Right now, looking at my calendar, I can just stay. Okay, yeah, I can do, I think I'm good for Wednesday.
Listen,
what? This is on the air, right?
Don't commit to anything.
All right. Just giving you my avails right now. And this can always change. I think I'm good for Wednesday. I think I'm actually good. I think I'm actually good Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
Oh, maybe we'll do all three of those days.
We might. Monday, Tuesday are pooched for me, but the other days might be okay.
It's so exciting.
I know. Getting back,
right,
dude.
We'll figure it out.
Getting back to regular schedule, dude.
Getting back to the bum and grind.
Mm-hmm.
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us, and we will talk to you next week. And thanks to Gray for being great on Game Show Friday, and thanks to Drew Remenda, the great Drew
for being employed. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for being employed.
Well,
we have a reason to talk to him.
Bringing his whimsy to the the Edmonton Oilers.
Like, I know everybody's raincoat popped off last year when he was not renewed by the San Jose Sharks. But honestly, did anyone really think that he was going to be a free agent longer than the summer? Not a chance. No. Not a chance.
All right. We will speak to you next week. Bye, everybody. Take care.